I'm Steve Punce.
And I'm a slowly melting ice sculpture.
With us are Jessica Foster-Hugh, Glenn Moore, Jess Robinson and Luke Kempner. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you and welcome to one of the many programmes that Boris Johnson will not be turning up for. There was a big laugh there in rehearsal. BBC have edited it out. Now, Woody Allen famously said that 80% of success is just showing up. Boris Johnson clearly thinks the remaining 20% will be enough to beat the current Labour Party.
According to the latest YouGov poll, he may not be wrong. Hashtag Chicken Boris has refused to confirm a date for his appearance on Andrew Neil's interview programme after seeing what happened to Jeremy Corbyn, whose interview was deemed a disaster by many commentators, although Prince Andrew apparently thought it had gone pretty well.
However, Corbyn came back fighting on the NHS, which has been on and off the table more times this week than a hen party in a Wetherspoons. Argument raged after Labour produced documents claiming the NHS was up for sale in any US trade deal. The Conservatives denied it. We won't know the truth until we hear it from Phil and Kirsty.
Donald is looking for a rundown 1940s property with a room for 106,000 doctors, 286,000 nurses and 21,000 midwives that he can buy up and run at a profit.
The property is not officially on the market yet, and the government says it's not for sale, and I believe them because, as everyone knows, I'm a massive Tory. So I'm not sure what I'm doing on Channel 4.
I wouldn't worry, Kirsty. Channel 4 won't be there much longer. Now, a few other celebrities have declared their political allegiances this week. Labour have too many to list, frankly, but not Liam Gallagher. No, he's come out for the Green Party. And there have been clues on that for a while. He bought a new car recently, told the salesperson that his only stipulation was that...
She's electric.
While Chris Martin has said he will probably vote for the Liberal Democrats, and this was confirmed by someone who saw the posters up in his window.
Yeah, they were all yellow.
So that was compulsory under the Obligatory Jokes Act of 2009. Other Lib Dem supporters include Dom Jolly.
Hello? No, I'm busy splitting the Remain vote. I'll call you later.
And Rachel Riley off of Countdown has also come out in support of the Lib Dems, presumably because she can actually do the maths on both the Labour and Conservative spending promises. Not that there is that much maths to do. The Tories only promised £2.9 billion extra expenditure, which is roughly equivalent to the number of things Richard Branson could buy in Poundland.
The maths is dodgy, though. Boris Johnson, for example, promised 50,000 more nurses.
But it turned out to be 31,500 new nurses, plus 18,500 nurses already employed, but who would probably have left the NHS had the promised money not come through, so they count as nurses additional to the current crop of nurses, even though they're not.
But that's fine, since the 40 hospitals which the Tories are building turns out to be 6 hospitals.
So the 34 hospitals which aren't being built can be staffed by the 18,500 new nurses who don't exist. So then the remaining 31,500 nurses will be available to staff the 6 new hospitals.
At a rate of just over 6,000 nurses per hospital.
Which is huge overstaffing, frankly, so there can be nursing cutbacks after the election. Which will not in any way affect the quality of the service provided.
Absolutely not. Anyway, the whole question of selling off the NHS may well be academic, because by the time we've realistically negotiated a full trade deal with the US... we'll have all developed resistance to all current drugs anyway.
Giving us the opportunity to develop new ones of our own. Proper, post-Brexit, British medicines.
Bad news. I'm afraid you haven't responded to the methicillin or vancomycin. But don't worry, we're going to put you on intravenous Bovril and pies.
And soon, Nigel was up and about again. But these kind of... But these kind of mathematical sleights of hand are common in politics. Something similar may be afoot with the pledge to...
put 20,000 more police on the streets.
Which can be accomplished at no additional cost.
By closing all the police stations.
You see?
A policy I intend to announce when I am interviewed by Andrew Neil next March.
The SNP also released their manifesto this week, reiterating their pledge to remove Trident submarines from Scotland.
Hello, is that Arlene? Arlene, it's Nicola. I was just wondering, you know how much you and the DUP bang on and on about how you love being part of the UK? I wondered whether you'd like to look after the UK's nuclear deterrent. It's just, according to the polls, you could be about to lose your bargaining power in Westminster. And Johnson did stitch you up on the backstop. And the missiles do come with an instruction manual. I knew you'd see sense. Oh, keep one back, though. I need one for Andrew Neil.
The other parties launched their Scottish campaigns too, allowing us a chance to glimpse the Prime Minister's skill at adapting to an audience. Here he is in London.
Self-determination for this great our nation is about to happen.
And here he is in Edinburgh.
Self-determination for this great nation is never going to happen.
But the arguments also got spiritual this week. The chief rabbi expressed his deep concern about anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. The Archbishop of Canterbury backed him up. And the Muslim Council of Britain both denounced anti-Semitism and criticised the Tory party for dealing with Islamophobia via denial, dismissal and defeat.
My least favourite of the Seven Dwarves. British politics, it seems, has finally got so toxic that God has been forced to message everyone in his WhatsApp group for help.
Which also explains why we're suddenly hearing a lot more from Tony Blair. Yeah.
Now, Jeremy Corbyn had a chance to put all this right when he actually turned up to be grilled by Andrew Neil, but then turned down the opportunity to confront the issue four times, which does seem to be his leadership style.
Iceberg dead ahead, Captain. What should we do?
I'd like to start by saying that, as your captain, I am determined to keep this ship safe for all our passengers.
But sir, the iceberg...
No, can I finish?
But it needs to be dealt with now,
listen,
sir.
Listen, I have been anti-icebergs all my life.
It's closing on the starboard bow, sir. We're going to hit it.
In fact, I absolutely abhor all kinds of natural disasters, whether they be ice...
Well, we've hit it, Captain. Would you like to take this opportunity to apologise to all the passengers?
Now is not the time for an apology.
And now, on tour with his 2019 sell-out Edinburgh show, it is Edinburgh Comedy Award nominee, Glenn Moore.
Before I was a comedian, I used to work full-time as a newsreader. It wasn't my childhood dream. I always sort of dreamt of having a different job, maybe something like a fireman, firefighter, or something like, bin fighter, anything like that. I realised it could be a newsreader, though, because that job requires you to have a natural newsreader's voice, and I've been stuck with the newsreader's voice since birth. If you're trying to place my accent, I was born in Cath Kidston. I think that sort of helped. All I wanted to be was a newsreader. I had posters on my wall of Lizo Mazumba and Hugh Edwards. I'd be stood in front of a mirror every night using my hairbrush as a microphone, bopping about saying things like, it could make sites like this a thing of the past. Classic seven-year-old behaviour. And I was also always terrified of getting into trouble. So newsreading was the perfect job for a spineless individual like me, because to be a newsreader, you've got to be fair, you've got to be impartial, and you've got to be balanced. So you're not allowed to give your own opinions, you can't get involved in any argy-bargy, that's short for Argentina, Bargentina. You're not allowed to. To get involved in anything like that, it's all fair, balanced, impartial. So if you interview like a left-wing guest, to balance it out, you've then got to interview a right-wing guest. So once, for instance, I was interviewing a woman whose husband had gone missing and she was really, really sad. So I then had to interview a woman whose husband had gone missing and it was fine. The problem is, no matter how balanced you are as a journalist, you always face accusations that you're biased. And it is perfectly natural to assume your side isn't getting enough coverage and one side is being given more weight over the other. So over this current period, if you're Conservative, chances are you're saying, can you stop interviewing Jeremy Corbyn, please? And if you're Labour, you're thinking, can you stop interviewing Jeremy Corbyn, please? I used to be a newsreader on LBC, who balanced out their coverage by having a number of different presenters with a number of different political viewpoints. So yes, it meant I had to be the newsreader for Nigel Farage, but on the plus side, I was also the newsreader for Katie Hopkins. Great. And let me tell you, never meet your heroes. I've got to say, the whole experience was very career-changing in that I was forced to change career immediately afterwards. No, try having colleagues like that. All my friends would complain about their colleagues and say, oh, my colleague's so annoying. My colleague spilt coffee over my desk. OK, mine spilt nationalism over the country. The problem with election coverage is that it is unbalanced by its very nature. So in the 2015 election, the radio station I worked at would give balanced coverage by playing, say, an interview with David Cameron in the 6 o'clock news, an interview with Ed Miliband in the 7 o'clock news, Farage in the 8 o'clock, then at 9 a clip of Nick Clegg audibly sighing before going back to Cameron at 10. But you might hear only one of those bulletins and assume the station is biased towards that particular interviewee. Or worse, you might only hear David Cameron in the 6 o'clock news and David Cameron again in the 10 o'clock news, and as a result, lead to the conclusion that the radio station that hired Nigel Farage and Katie Hopkins is somehow right-wing. But it happened even in the last week. As Steve said, Boris Johnson was laughed at on Question Time, but when the highlights were aired, there were loads of complaints. People were saying, you've edited out the laughter, a complaint I've also frequently levelled at the BBC whenever I appear on a panel show. But we can't show you everything. Stuff gets edited down, stuff gets cut out, and yes, sometimes it looks like bias. But certainly from a radio perspective, news bulletins are often trying to fit a day's worth of election coverage into a 90-second bulletin. And depending on where you are in the UK, your equal coverage may also extend to the SNP, Sinn Féin, the DUP, that Welsh one, so inevitably you won't hear from every candidate. And inevitably, the smaller parties get left out, so you're unlikely to hear anything from my nearest candidate, Dennis Denise, from the Repetition Party Party. Nor will you ever hear his anti-Brexit slogan, don't let let the country country make AA serious, serious, boo 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 boo. And the frustrating part for newsreaders is suddenly they're being far more scrutinised out of nowhere at a time when people seem to be far less engaged about the news anyway. Case in point, there was an article on the Times website the other week, an article on the Times Online that said fewer and fewer people are now bothering to pay for online newspaper subscriptions. Anyone else read the first 1.5 paragraphs of this? Disgusting. And the scrutiny is so severe around election time. That's why I walked away from the whole thing. What's the point? You've got to be so opinionless as a newsreader while also getting punished by the public for it. It's terrifying. And to be honest, it's like that in any job. You can lose your job for saying the wrong thing. You can lose your job over a joke. My granddad did. My granddad used to work at a graveyard. And every time elderly people came in to visit, he'd say, oh, you're early? That's funny. And now I'm not a newsreader anymore, now I'm free from those binds, I think I'm going to say whatever the hell I want, confess my feelings and my deepest, darkest secrets. Now I'm away from that job, the shackles are off, I can say whatever the hell I want, like I only ever use the big flush, even for wheeze. There you go. I think we should rename Gibraltar Spain the Rock Johnson. Sorry, it's just my views. What's the point in being fair and impartial? I'll never work in news ever again. I'll just get a different job, like a florist or an ice cream fighter.
Now, she's been nominated for Dave's Edinburgh Comedy Award for Best Show and is taking that show on an international tour after a run at the Soho Theatre in January. Please welcome Jessica Fosterkew.
As well as being a comedian, I'm parent to a four-year-old, quite a naughty one. Before I had him when I was pregnant, I would say out loud to people, I don't care if I have a boy or a girl, I just want to have a strong daughter or a gentle son. What a dick. And as karma for that smugness, I've got a very violent boy. He's like a one-man stag do. He is, however, growing out of it, and in absolutely terrible news for my comedy, he's becoming quite a nice guy. Got it! For the relevant record, I'm also pansexual. I know. My dad lives 200 miles away, but I can almost hear him from here saying, oh, for God's sake, pan what? What is that? Pansexual means exactly what it sounds like. I find well-cooked food hugely erotic. And I fancy men who refuse to grow up. It also means I'm liable to fall in love with anyone regardless of their gender. We used to say bisexual, but the bi bit assumes that there are only two genders, and these days that's a bit like thinking there are only three sugar babes. Turns out, actually, there's probably hundreds. Right now, my ex-partner, my son's dad, and I are currently knockers deep in looking around primary schools for my son to start at in September. You'll have seen the story in the news this week of Anderton Park, a primary school in Birmingham, where there have been protests against the new law, which means that from next September, children will be taught, amongst other things, that LGBT plus families exist and that there's nothing wrong with them. This week, a High Court judge ruled that these protests directly outside the school gates are going to be permanently banned. Right, yeah, good, because we do exist. I know that you can't see me, you can only hear me because it's radio, but I absolutely promise that I do exist. I'll pinch myself if you want. Ow! See? I'd have more sympathy with the protesters if the new curriculum demanded that children get taught about something the existence of which was debatable, like unicorns or affordable housing. I've been doing tours around schools where I live, and I'm so lucky because the schools all seem amazing. Shame about some of the parents, though. One school I looked around, there was a dad on the tour who genuinely trod on a child in every room. It was like Whack-A-Mole meets The Hunger Games. One parent at a school I saw asked in front of everyone else, can I just ask, how will you cope if my child is extremely academically gifted? What? I have never wished a thicker kid on anyone in my life. It's a bigot. This is Britain, a beautifully multicultural, tolerant Britain. But here, I will have you know, even if you do think your child might be absolutely brilliant, you should at least have the common decency to be bloody embarrassed about it. And the worst thing about these tours is that half the parents have brought their simpleton toddlers on the tour with them, as if their opinion matters. I once picked up my son from a gymnastics class and asked him in front of all of the other parents and children, what did you do in gymnastics today? And he honestly, very proudly said, I didn't listen. Don't count his opinion. The protesters have argued that this new relationship education is sexualising their children. How? They're not handing out to each child a big gay Kama Sutra like a modern-day Gideon Bible. There isn't even any such thing as a big gay Kama Sutra. Believe me, I've checked. One protester said that the school was overemphasising a gay ethos. Hardly, mate. It's a school that's trying to celebrate difference and remove judgment. If it's emphasising a gay ethos you're after, can I recommend a lovely documentary called RuPaul's Drag Race? It is relationship education, learning what all the things a happy relationship, including friendship, etc., might look like in these kids' lives. How can that be anything other than brilliant? How can that do anything other than teach compassion, tolerance and safety, actually, from unhappy relationships? I left a relationship I was unhappy in this year. Let me tell you, being single again in your mid-30s with a kid for the first time in 9 years is harrowing. Back in my 20s, which is the last time I was single, when I was joyfully promiscuous, I would occasionally, embarrassingly have to make a call to a lover and say, like, oh, look, I mean, you know, this is awkward, but I think, you know, we might both have an STI. Don't judge me, we've all been there. But this time round, it's all changed. Now I'm a grown-up and a parent. This time round, when I got dating again, I honestly had to make a call at one point to someone and say, I'm really sorry, but I think I might have given you nits.
That's true.
The protesters argue that this ban is in breach of their human rights, but no one has a human right to make other families feel scared, sad or unsafe. This is why I am emotional with relief that the judge, Mr. Justice Mark Warby, has banned these protests. Because I've been having this nightmare, this daymare, about picking up my son from his new primary school amidst the parents of his friends on loudspeakers and placards saying that they think we shouldn't exist. And I would have to say to my son, what do you do at school today? And I'd have to be hoping and praying that he would proudly reply, I didn't listen.
Black days traditionally mark major economic events. There's Black Monday,
October 19th, 1987.
Wall Street falls 22% in a day.
Black Wednesday,
September 16th, 1992.
The pound is forced out of the European exchange rate mechanism.
And Black Friday,
29th November 2019.
Bargains galore at your local retailers, so get on down for low, low prices.
Yes, Black Friday, traditionally followed by Cyber Monday, and how did I end up with three Nespresso machines Tuesday? This year, however, Which magazine has warned the public not to trust the deals on offer, something we've grown quite good at recently.
While the election has dominated the headlines, other things have been happening in the world. Taxi app Uber is in danger in 20 UK cities after losing its licence to operate in London over insufficient security checks. Apparently, drivers were allowing other people to drive their cars, which, ironically, would ruin the movie Taxi Driver.
You're talking to me? You're talking to me? Actually, you're not. You're talking to my mate Dave, who I let my cab do tonight. What you gonna do? He's completely unqualified.
For younger listeners, of course, Robert De Niro is better known as the man in the Warburtons advert.
Many Londoners are worried and say that black cabs are prohibitively expensive, but there are plenty of ways of getting around that are significantly cheaper than a black cab. A private helicopter, for example. Or chartered yacht, although hailing one of those is quite difficult.
Oh, sorry, love, I'm taking Greta Thunberg down to Tesco's.
In Washington, President Trump invited Conan, the dog who helped catch ISIS leader al-Baghdadi, to the White House, and he looked delighted to finally have someone in the building who can actually be ordered to stay. The dog was there to receive, and we quote,
a medal and plaque.
Come to the White House, leave with gum disease. Trump enthused about the animal, saying,
he's in prime time. He is the best dog. And he is a tickly tummy. Who is a tickly tummy? He does. Look at his paws. Those paws can run. And they can hold down a bad guy. And best of all, those paws can't write any kind of memoirs.
Sitting submissively, obeying every command and staring adoringly at his master, Mike Pence was also there. Still, you want to be careful using an army dog for your own political purposes.
Yep, that can turn around and bite you on the arse. Sure enough, next day, the dog came out in favour of impeachment. Back in Britain, meanwhile, recent events have prompted a new flood of charity commercials.
To remove Prince Andrew from your list of patrons, just text STOP to 002002. You'll receive regular updates and this colourful, cuddly toy pizza.
Prince Andrew is keeping his contacts in the military, although, quite rightly, a military source apparently said,
some regiments might be a bit worried about having Andrew's photo on their Christmas card. Hmm.
Although he claims that the photo was doctored, he never had his arm around that Brigadier General. When you look at what's happened to the royal family this year, it's like they got fed up with the Crown getting better ratings than they were and decided to come up with some more interesting plot lines.
OK, so how about Philip has a car crash?
Oh, yes, on a long straight road where it's almost impossible. Right.
That's great. How about this? Andrew is exposed as having a friendship with a convicted sex offender.
Ooh, perfect. Up yours, Olivia Colman.
But we need a big showstopper for Christmas Day.
Ooh, how about this? During my speech on Christmas Day, there's a massive explosion.
You sure about that?
Oh, yes. These corgis have very delicate digestive systems, you know.
But first, we've got a long Black Friday weekend of shopping ahead.
But the worst thing about Black Friday is that it has devalued Christmas, because half-price presents aren't really the same. If the retail industry wants to survive, they need to make gift-giving more meaningful again.
Here you go, Linda.
Oh, a cashmere jumper! Oh, it's beautiful, thank you so much! Oh, but this must have been so expensive. Please tell me you got it in the sale.
Actually, I got it on In the Red Saturday. You see, it's the most expensive day of the year. It was literally double the recommended price, which I'm sure you'll agree shows that I love you very much.
Oh, you shouldn't have tone. Oh,
I know, I'll have to illegally drive 6 different Ubers every night for a month to pay for it. But hey, what did you get me?
Oh, I hope you won't be disappointed. It's several discounted Nespresso machines.
And now would you please welcome comedian, singer, actor and impressionist Jess Robinson.
A perfect magical storm is brewing this week as Disney's new movie slash toy vehicle Frozen 2 is breaking box office records, and Black Friday marks the beginning of the annual festival of fiscal incontinence. There's a blue-pink glow on the high street tonight that's just slightly princessy. It's precision engineered for little people's eyes to see. Black Friday, Christmas, New Year's sales, a season without end. Consciously or not, you are going to spend, spend, spend all your dough. Watch it go on big dresses and snowman toys, even though we all know it's brainwashing girls and boys. They don't care if you've seen the film. The pressure's on to buy more plastic tat anyway. It's funny how November has suddenly unleashed a need to purchase goods made by child labor in the Far East. So many things you have to get: lunchbox, pajamas, Lego set. Just 40 quid for a dolly. I'll take three. So we go with a wheelbarrow, loading up at the Disney store. Marketing overload. Who can say no? Don't want to let down your family. So it goes on and on till all your cash is gone. And then they put out Frozen 3. And you'll buy more plastic tat anyway.
Thank you very much indeed for listening. And goodbye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt, Jessica Fostercue, Glenn Moore, Jess Robinson, Luke Kempner, and what is now a small pool of cold water. It was written by the cast with additional material from Rose Johnson, Mike Shepherd, Laura Major, Zoe Tomlin, and Mandy Baker. The song was by Jess Robinson and Alex Silverman. The producer was Matt Strong, and it was a BBC Studios production.